Welcome to Blogging Heads TV. I'm Michael Brooks.
And I'm Samita Mukhopadhyay.
And I've hosted a couple of these before, and I'm a contributor at a daily political talk show and YouTube show called The Majority Report that's actually won a couple of awards. I should start mentioning that more often. And I host a weekly podcast on Middle East, South Asia for Aslan Media. And, you know, you could see my writing and different places like Al Monitor, Al Jazeera, Washington Post, and talking in other places, TV channels and things like that. So just generally, hopefully, providing helpful opinion and analysis.
One would hope.
You all can hope. I'm just enjoying talking. And I'm joined by one of my best friends in the entire world, Samita Mukhopadhyay, who can tell you about all of her various awesome things that she does.
I didn't prepare a speech, Michael.
Well, I don't know if that was quite a speech. I'm getting like challenged right out of the gate. That was just a self-affirming intro.
It was. I'm so proud of you. You're doing so much awesome stuff.
Thank you.
Let's see. Okay, I'm Samita. I work for a firm in New York City called Purpose, and we do kind of digital and political strategy for different social causes. But you most likely know me, if you know me at all, as the former executive editor of a blog called Feministing, which is about for and by awesome young feminists. In a dashing attempt to make feminism relevant for a new generation.
And totally did. It's great work.
So, oh, yeah, and I wrote a book.
Yeah, you wrote a book.
I wrote a book. I always forget because that's just how momentous it was. Just kidding. It was totally a big deal.
Say the title of the book.
It's called Outdated, Why Dating is Ruining Your Love Life. And it's a feminist intervention to all the dating books you don't like. Like the rules and the game.
Your dating book is the only dating book I've ever read.
I didn't even know you read my book.
I read a good chunk of it.
That's awesome.
I did, absolutely. I'm always going to read the Samita work. So, look, there's so much that is happening, and I'm really excited for many obvious reasons to be talking with you this week. So, and basically, what we're going to get to is that a couple of days ago, Bell Hooks, who is, you know, I'm sure as most people watching know, is a really profoundly important theorist, writer, academic. I mean, you know, someone with just a tremendous kind of range behind her. She was at a forum in New York City. She called Beyonce a terrorist. You're going to elaborate on that. But we're also talking the day, it should be mentioned, where that was causing some controversy over the weekend. And, but what happened today is that Beyonce's sister, went after Jay-Z in an elevator. It was pretty
yeah,
brutal.
Yeah.
We don't know why.
Yeah. We don't have the backstory. Yeah. yeah. I don't understand how I'm supposed to focus on anything now that we have this mystery out there and we don't have any explanation.
Yeah. That is our, well, this is such a terrible thing to say. I was going to say it's our Malaysia plane, but I shouldn't joke about that.
You know what's interesting? So earlier today, Zerlina Maxwell said to me, you know, everyone wants to know why she got upset, but it's actually an interesting, I wouldn't say it's a double standard because obviously violence is different. You know, it is a gender-based kind of experience. Had kind of he been the perpetrator of the violence, we wouldn't actually be wondering why, because we'd just be like, that's terrible. Like, that is terrible that that happened. And we should just be like, that was an act of violence and she did not condone violence. Then it's really fascinating that everyone's just like, oh, but like, what, you know, why, you know, why? Because I want to know. Like, I definitely want to know.
No, that's an interesting point. Yeah. And actually it's, you know, I think, yeah, we could talk about this for a minute, obviously. And I think that, you know, the other thing, when I actually watched the footage, because a lot of people were joking about it. And I just saw 50 Cent put up a video of his play by play of it, which, you know, it's funny. I don't know what that says about me, but I did find it funny. You're but a the bad actual video, person. Yeah, I'm a bad. Exactly, that's what it said. But the actual footage of her going at him in the elevator, that's actually like it's not in any way like it's terrible, you know?
Yeah, it's really
anytime. Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's really shocking. She's clearly very upset. You know, she's it's very shocking. And then Beyonce's reaction, where she's just kind of standing there, and it's all we have. That's all we have. We have no information. We have to go about our days with no information about Beyonce. I don't know how we're supposed to do this.
How are we supposed to survive? Well, from my perspective, I think that after what Nas did to Jay-Z, I don't think Jay-Z needs any more. I think, you know, that was enough.
Well, what are you
my very.
What specific Nas Jay-Z incident are you talking about?
Well, I mean Ether.
I figured you were talking about. But
that record is directed at you. I don't know what more like needs to. I think it's like Jay-Z should just get tremendous credit for, you know, continuing to have a successful career and getting out of bed every day after that album was put,
yeah,
you know, was
true.
Directed at him. But no, I think you're right though that there is just something about like, of course it's salacious and it's exciting, but any time, hopefully, we watch one human being kind of try to physically harm another, there's something that should be, that's like innately upsetting. And we should, you know, try to consider that a little bit too, for sure.
Yeah. So speaking of harm and
so
terror.
Let's get to the terrorism. So I want to know, like, I watched the forum where she said this, but basically like what did she say and what was the context for it? And what are your kind of takeaways basically from what Bell Hooks was saying and the response to her?
Yeah. So I think just to give people context who are not kind of all over Twitter and embroiled in these kind of these salacious and explosive moments, as they unfold on the internet. So Bell Hooks is actually doing a residency at the New School, where she's holding a series of talks. And so this particular one was, do you have the names of the people that were there? There was four people on the panel.
I'm familiar with Bell Hooks and with Janet Mock.
Mock, yeah.
I don't.
So
yeah,
there was two other phenomenal writers that I would love to kind of like look up and also give props to. So in the panel, you know, they're talking about enslavement and Black women's bodies and images and depictions of Black women's body in the public. And so, Bell Hooks kind of makes the statement that, specifically referring to Beyonce's Time cover photo, which, I would suggest looking up, that she, you know, she has a childlike or kind of deer caught in the headlights look on her. She's dressed in, you know, she says something like panties and her bra, and, you know, she's really serving this image in the service of kind of white supremacist patriarchy. And, you know, it's this kind of like childlike look that she's presenting for a predatory male gaze. Very controversial thing to say. and I think, you know, Beyonce, who is kind of has become synonymous with empowerment, right? Or like women's empowerment in pop culture in a lot of ways, especially after her last album. I mean, the fact that nobody would deny that Beyonce is at the top of her game, that she's a boss. She's kind of, you know, she's like the ultimate, you know, I can have it all. I can do it all and be awesome at it, right?
Right.
And so, you know, and so Janet Mock kind of pushes back on her and says, you know, I think that glamour, I think glamour can be incredibly empowering, and she kind of talks about her own experience a little bit, but also that Beyonce is very much kind of in charge of and in control of the images that go out there. And anyone that's, you know, you don't have to be a full-on Baithiest like myself to know that, you know, Beyonce has talked quite publicly, or there's a lot of articles written about, you know, how the extent to which she goes to kind of control her image and what, you know, she's comfortable with having out there, the kind of types of finished products that she's putting out there. She very much controls her own messaging. She controls the world. And to which Bell Hooks responded, that's a fantasy. That, you know, she's complicit in the construction of herself as a slave. So, you know, and I think, you know, don't just take my words. Like I do recommend kind of watching the clip if you have, you know, like 45 minutes to kill.
right.
But I think, right. I think she brings up some interesting points. I mean, I think it's important to contextualize that Bell Hooks is, you know, she has a long career of kind of deconstructive feminist critiquing, right? So she looks at movies, she looks at popular culture, and she's always been very critical of popular culture. A lot of her early writing was about Madonna, and, you know, she's talked about hip hop music, and she talks about O.J. Simpson, and that is her fascination, that is her area of study. And so I don't think this is an unpredictable thing from her, for her to say, right?
No, that's a really important point, actually. So that, because if you were just kind of, if you were first hearing of Bell Hooks by looking at a Gawker headline or something, you would be really taken aback by that. But there is a long context in her work. And her work, as we keep saying, is very, very substantial. I mean, whether or not you take everything on or not, I mean, this is a person who's published many books, who's held many teaching positions. I mean, there is a real context for what she's saying, which, again, accept it or not, but it wasn't just a kind of flippant, oh, this will go viral moment. There's a context for where she's coming from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it very much folds into her larger canon of work. And you know, suffice it to say, Bell Hooks' contribution to the particular field that I come out of, you know, which is women and gender studies and lots of education in that. I mean, I have said many times that, like, I would not be here had I not found Bell Hooks, right?
Right.
And so the kind of impact that she's had on the sector and all of us in finding our voices and, you know, something that historically was kind of academic and a more academic pursuit. And the fact that we're actually having trending topics or that Bell Hooks is even on Twitter, you know, and there's a public conversation about Bell Hooks is like, I mean, that is a vast change from, you know, I think it's very exciting. I think it's a very exciting moment that we could kind of have all these complex stories in the mainstream about kind of women of color and Black women and, you know, all of that stuff.
I mean, so, but okay. So and that's important to acknowledge the context and acknowledge Bell Hooks. But I think, I mean, you pointed out, I want to get your take on this basically and what you make of what she's saying, what she's alluding to. I mean, one thing though, you will notice, and I agree, it's very much worth watching this video if you haven't already. Bell Hooks is, I'm just going to run this by you. I want to get your perspective. But what I found paradoxical about watching the video is, as you say, Bell Hooks is someone who is really strongly committed to stepping out of all sorts of categories, not just ones defined by pop culture, ones defined by capitalism, frankly. She's looking at, you know, we need to define new measures of worth, new ways of kind of looking and evaluating and allowing our imaginations to kind of get unhooked from these images that, you know, according to her, someone like Beyonce represents. So I found what she said to Janet Mock specifically was like incredibly dismissive. And she did not really take her in. And then the other thing I found interesting is that, and this is, you know, I think this is a paradox that everybody who kind of works in these categories at all kind of deals with. And as you're, you know, building your career and dealing with that. So it's like, look, Bell Hooks has an incredibly radical perspective, and she's a seminal, I mean, you know, we can keep emphasizing that. She's an incredibly important thinker. And what's interesting is that she's talking about stepping out of all these categories, but on the panel, she's exercising her power because she's fucking Bell Hooks.
Yeah.
So there's the paradox where, like, she has the power in this panel. And she's totally dismissing Janet Mock and what she's saying. So I thought that was a kind of interesting tension.
I found that to be very fascinating. I mean, I think that I've seen her speak a couple of times, and she's definitely a troublemaker, right? Like, she's smart.
Right.
And she's aware. She's aware of her own power, and she knows the kind of impact that she's had. You know, so I do think that's an interesting piece of information to add while you're kind of analyzing the way this conversation played out. So, I mean, I think, like, let's talk about what she's missing, right? So, you know, so it totally set the internet on fire. It's kind of this very salacious statement in a moment where it's like, it's definitely the era of Beyonce. There are so many young people that very much, young people all ages, women of all ages, that very much relate to what Beyonce is putting out there. They find her to be incredibly empowering. They find her to be sex positive. They find her to be very much in control and, you know, very thoughtful in the way that she's presenting her sexuality as something that's a self-empowered construction, not as like at the will of Jay-Z or, you know, for particularly the male gaze. So I do think that, you know, her being dismissive, specifically on the panel of kind of Janet Mock's opinions, but also the, you know, extensive writing that's kind of been done by feminists about this moment of empowerment and excitement around Beyoncé kind of claiming her own sexuality and what it means for a Black woman to kind of claim their own sexuality publicly, and how that goes against how historically it's been projected in the kind of mainstream media. So that's really exciting. And to not kind of get and fully support that moment of excitement is disappointing, right? It's disappointing. It's what you hope. You hope that like your thinkers, that thinkers kind of evolve with the time and can recognize things contextually, right?
Right.
You know, so I think, but that said, you know, I do think that there is a piece here around capitalism, right? And this idea of oppression. And you know, and I said this kind of flippantly earlier today, and I was like, you know, I just feel like as a generation, we've just like given up on the fight against capitalism, right? It's like we're not, we're just not going to win that. Like, there's just no point, right?
Right.
You know, oh, Occupy Wall Street didn't even have a plan, okay? This is people who are living on the street. They didn't even have a plan, you know? we don't have...
It's a whole other conversation, but no, yeah. No, I hear what you're saying, that we're not, if the big battles in a certain sense, and not that obviously race and gender and everything, it's all intertwined, but there is an argument that if we look at certain macro issues from, yeah, I mean, you want to talk about capitalism, that, you know, or different ways of planning an economy, that's incredibly macro, but even like climate change, or even systemic inequality, and we look at it and we say, wow, man, that really does not look solvable on some level,
mm-hmm.
then we can kind of focus on these areas of intervention for better or for worse, and it might be very positive, but it's not necessarily, like you're saying, it's not going at the big picture in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hear you, yeah.
Right. So I think that our identity has become fused with that sense in a little way. And I think one of the more provocative questions that Hooks asks on the panel is, how do we kind of separate capitalism or the fact that she's truly like this aspirational brand in a lot of ways, right? Mm-hmm. Like she's a brand and she's an aspirational brand. Like,
totally.
I want to be like Beyonce. I'm not even going to pretend I don't. And, or I want some elements of that in my life, right? How do we kind of remove our desire for capitalism and kind of aspiration from an objective understanding of her positive influence, right? And right. I think that is an actual, like, I genuinely think it's a complicated conversation for us to grapple with. And, you know, and that's not to concede any of, I mean, she said all kinds of stuff. Like, I, you know, beyond the fact that we should really stop using the word terrorist, like.
Yeah, we need to like actually use that like, for like, we yeah. need to, I'm a big, I do, you know, I do a lot of foreign policy
yeah.
stuff. So I get really annoyed by any type of like sloppy yeah. usage of that term. So I hear it definitely.
You know, or suggesting that, you know, some of the most major assaults on feminism have come from kind of women and pop culture and, you know, projections of women. I work daily on a campaign that's fighting reproductive rights. Like, I disagree with that statement. You know, I think that the more positive images we have of women being sexual, the better, because as long as the people that run governments in really tiny states all over the United States believe that fundamentally women who need access to abortion are whores, they're going to continue to propose legislation that's going to stop, disallow us to have access to reproductive rights. So I think that she exaggerated a little bit, right, about the impact, the negative impact that she thinks that Beyoncé has on kind of feminism and mainstream ideas of beauty and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I want to broaden this in a second, but I'm interested in that one thread because, you know, when I was watching that video, I mean, I already told you what some of my reactions were to it, and I'm kind of glad that they track with yours in some ways. But the yeah. other thoughts that I had were, yeah, okay, this is interesting, like, bell hooks, whether, you know, you agree with her or not. And I would not even consider myself someone who's, you know, I've read some of her. I'm not hugely fluent in her work by any stretch, but she's always going after the big picture, the big game. Mm-hmm. And that's, I love that in anybody, particularly someone who's obviously incredibly intelligent. But then it's like when you, I felt so, but it was almost going from sentence to sentence, like, wow, that's a really, really sharp thing. Huh, I got to think about that. And then the second one, and I, you know, I'll just put this in stark terms because I really want to get your thoughts on it. It was like, it seemed kind of like, I don't know what the right word would be, but just kind of scolding, just kind of like, all right, I get it. You don't like, you know, seeing like a woman in a skimpy outfit. Yeah. You don't like TV, you know, I mean, and it just kind of felt like, right, there's a lot of baby boomers, frankly, who, you know, they don't like that. They don't like how it manifests, whether it's Beyonce or anybody else. And, you know, and for, you know, with Mick Jagger and Tina Turner, it's cool. Maybe it's not cool for bell hooks, but generally it is. And, but with, you know, with Beyonce, it's not. It's too much. Yeah. And so how does that kind of fit in where there's a part of it that just feels like, oh, you just, you know, you just don't like what the kids are listening to or whatever. I mean, I don't know. Is that valid?
Absolutely. I think that, you know, this is a core tension in, you know, different generations of feminists, right? There's on a certain level, you know, those in my generation and younger, you know, we're seen as having gone soft on some of the hardcore issues of our kind of feminist foremothers or whatever, you know, the kind of, especially around beauty, you know, especially around buying into ideas about fashion and makeup and you know, always having our nails done. I mean, whatever.
Are you flashing your nails right now?
I'm not flashing my nails, okay, but I can.
I can't see.
I'm flashing. All right, yeah. But, you know, I think
Samita always has very well done nails. True story.
You know, I think there is a frustration. And I've heard it before. You know, I think that it's limiting, right? And what we don't think about, what we, you know, and I think that sometimes this is what's most frustrating about these very absolutist kind of puritanical feminist ideologies, right? Is that it limits the possibility to reach a wider swath of people, right? And so, you know, what, you know, Beyonce gives us the opportunity to reach women that are never going to read feminist blogs. I mean, let's just be real about that. Yeah. Like, they may not have even heard the term feminist ever in their life until it was quoted in a Beyonce song. Like, let's not forget that, like, literally the most important recording artist of our generation has in the middle of one of her tracks an extensive quote on feminism. That happened. Like, that actually happened. And if you can't see the value in that, if you don't fundamentally see the value in that, you are not seeing how kind of gender is playing out in the world around you day to day, the way that women are living their lives every day. Like, we can put all the theory out there that we want and say, you know, this is what's most feminist. This is what, you know, this is what's going to be a vision of liberation. But people need low barrier entry points to actually get interested in these topics, right? So what is our low barrier entry point? Beyonce is a low barrier entry point. Like, there's no one in the world that hasn't heard of her. Like, you don't get more low barrier, you know? So I'm very frustrated at the idea of not kind of seeing the forest for the trees in terms of the power that the power of kind of self-recognition and feminism that Beyonce brings to a much broader audience than frankly any of us have ever been able to do.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that, so, I mean, basically, you appreciate some of what bell hooks has said, and you're not calling the bajency on her, but you're a little, you're calling her out a little bit. But I mean, I think that that's a broader problem with the left in general. I mean, I think that there is this way that left politics started to get very associated with kind of a certain kind of puritanical streak and a self-righteous disconnect from pop culture, which is not to say that you shouldn't be, you know, aware of pop culture or have some kind of, you know, silly view of it and not think critically about it. But if you're not kind of engaging with what most people are engaging in, and you're the person who, you know, oh, Beyonce's this, or I don't watch sports or whatever, you know, that gives a tinge to a politics, and it's a very unappealing tinge for most people. Yeah. And I do wonder, though, that she did allude to, and she kind of said, you know, if Beyonce was homeless, would someone recognize her voice? And again, I don't, you know, I think that was specifically to Beyonce. I think that that's kind of a shaky example, but what I do think she was getting to, and I think that this is an interesting thing to think about, because, and this is, you know, we're taking this is just totally mainstream kind of Democratic party politics. We can take the conversation there. But I think what we've seen under Obama and in the last several years is that at least amongst like the Democratic Party and a certain type of professional, a certain type of person who's, you know, coastal, whatever. But not just that. I mean, now we have, if you're a, you know, all Democratic senators, I think except for one, maybe, support marriage equality. So that includes people from very red states. People are, you know, more and more people are kind of upfront about being supporting women's right to choose, access to an abortion. So in a certain sense, the social issues kind of move in a certain way, but not necessarily in a deep way.
Right.
So we have, and then especially how all of those issues are, and I think what bell hooks is trying to point to, how they're connected to inequality. So right. we have like marriage equality, that's excellent, but you know, there's a lot less attention to, you know, the crisis of homelessness in LGBT communities, which I know some people work on that issue, but even, you know, more generally, obviously, how that overlaps with, you know, the assault on parenthood is, of course, and it's an attack on abortion, but that's very, very class and inequality based. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering, like, as, and then, so now all of a sudden people are starting to talk about inequality. People are, you know, pretending to read Piketty and everything else. And, you know, it's great. I mean, from my, you know, from my perspective, like inequality really needs to be on the table. So it's like, I think that that's very fundamental. So how does, I get low barrier to entry. And I also just get, by the way, again, we should just say like Beyonce is really good at what she does. And she yeah. produces like a great product. And that's yeah. like really important.
The music is good.
Yeah, the music's good. I mean, that's not, you know, it, like, right. Like,
aren't we going to have dancing at the revolution?
Exactly. So that's really, really important. But then it's like, how does that aspirational brand, if I was going to like pick out what I thought was the most important thing that bell hooks is pointing right. to, it's like, how does that aspirational brand fit with
right.
not even being, because I think dealing with inequality doesn't mean people, like everybody's going to be striving and people should want to have the lives they want to have. Again, there's no contradiction there. But we got to do better than you can live out, you know, I mean, Jay-Z is even more extreme. Jay-Z has said things to the effect of like, each time like I get out of a Bentley, that is like a redemption for the neighborhood I came from. And it's like, no, it's not. And that's not good enough.
That's
so,
inaccurate.
You know, how does that overlap? Yeah, right. So right. how does, I mean, that's not a direct yeah. quote. I'm truncating, but something to that effect. So
right. No.
How does that, you know, how does that interplay the inequality stuff with what you say? Yeah. Her aspirational brand.
So, I mean, one of the opportunities we have, right, is to connect, you know, every time we're talking about Beyonce and putting all this scrutiny on who she is and her personal decisions and kind of, you know, why she's doing the things that she's doing, or is she, you know, is she a product of fantasy or is she self-empowered, and all of those questions. Like, I think we get overly caught up in those conversations when we have an opportunity to actually talk about some of these broader issues, right? So,
yeah.
you know, how does a young girl in Houston who sees Beyonce on TV, how does it actually impact her day-to-day life? Like, does it make her, you know, why aren't there more interviews with young girls and the kind of unbelievable empowering impact that it's having on them? And then like, get real, you know, like let's get some real information from people. How are they carrying these kind of ideas and feelings with them throughout their day-to-day life? Is it like a net good? Is it a net bad? And, you know, one of the things that I think about a lot, because I'm so invested in culture change work, you know, even though right now I'm doing, you know, obviously like more political strategy and that kind of stuff, like I'm very deeply invested in culture change work and, you know, the importance of us changing the way that we're represented in the mainstream media and how that impacts our day-to-day belief in what we think we're capable of, right? If you don't see yourself, how can you actually believe that you deserve something or that you belong somewhere? And I think the power in that is that when you are faced with these kind of retrograde policies or inequality or, you know, so many of the difficulties that people are attempting to overcome, especially in, you know, poor people, is, yeah. you know, how does you seeing yourself in a positive light impact your ability to do something better for yourself or to demand the things that you deserve in your life? And I'd be very curious to explore that question, right? Is there a relationship between, because we're all saying, but like most of us are college educated. Like we're not, you know what I mean? It's like, yes, Beyonce from an academic, like woman of color, feminist perspective is like, oh my God, I've been waiting for you my entire life, right? But,
like, wow.
Finally, you know? But like for, you know, for young women that don't have the same kind of access to the same type of opportunities, who are going to be faced with difficult decisions in their life, who are going to, be sexualized in ways that are difficult to think about and just, embedded part of their reality. Like how does Beyonce kind of impact those communities?
Yeah, that would be a really, really interesting. That's fascinating. And so, and then that gets back to another, I think you're pointing to another really interesting distinction in what Hooks was saying, because all Bell Hooks's reference to, you know, the outside, and specifically when she said terrorist, I mean, she was specifically saying it, as I understood, in the context of basically this is terrorizing young women to try to look a certain way, yeah, and conform to a certain standard. But you're saying the opposite track, and I think this is a really right. That's a really interesting paradox, because like we can take role models or people we really admire, and we can take it to, you know, beat ourselves up, whatever. Or you could say, wow, this is this person who is sort of like embodying these traits that I'd like to cultivate in myself, and therefore I'm going to go cultivate them.
Yeah,
and that's great.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, we are so quick to say it has to be one or the other.
Yeah.
She's both, right? She's both would not have been as successful if she had not been as thin and hot as she is. Duh. Right. Like, okay, hi, obvious, everyone say the obvious thing. Like, you know.
So wait, I just want to be clear. You're saying that you think that Beyonce's physical attractiveness has affected her career? I can't. Wow. That's the type of thing. That's why you tune into Blogging It. No, absolutely. Of course. Yeah.
Right. You know, yeah. And so she can kind of be, you know, and that is the complexity. I mean, that is the reality of being a young woman. You have to constantly navigate that you are both, you know, presented with images that are empowering and are sometimes going to make you feel shitty about yourself. And that is, I feel that is one of the biggest complexities that young women today are grappling with and navigating. You know, is the complexity of, you know, what do I see of myself? What of this is actually me? What of this makes me feel bad? You know, and where is the opportunity here? And I'm deeply, deeply impressed, especially because I speak at a lot of colleges and universities and I don't even want to limit to women. I was just young people, all the different ways that they're kind of consuming these images and the complicated way in which they're casting their own identity through these images is really powerful to me. And I think there's a tremendous opportunity there, despite the fact that you also have this kind of increased exaggeration of the, you know, beauty ideal represented in the media, more so than definitely when I was a child, which was a long time ago. So
no, not that
long. Enough where
I'm
the media
sure it wasn't that long,
and
I'm sure it was pretty bad too.
it was definitely bad, yeah. Too, but it, yeah, wasn't as kind of, we weren't as saturated with information at the time because we didn't have computers and personal devices, so we used to go outside and play.
Right, so you didn't always have an electric device being like,
yeah,
you suck
yeah,
you
exactly
suck. Right, I understand. Well, yeah. Actually, so this is actually, I think, a really good transition in some ways, because I wanted to get your thoughts also on, and surprisingly, I'm surprised, honestly, at how strongly I feel about this topic. It kind of shocks me. But, you know, Monica Lewinsky is back in the news, and she wrote this essay for Vanity Fair, and there's a lot of, you know, I guess it's bringing us back to that time, and run off of this, but I mean, someone who has been just a punchline, basically. I mean, someone who's just kind of like a conduit for tacky jokes about Bill Clinton's sex life,
mm-hmm,
is coming back as a 40-year-old woman. I think she's 40 now,
mm-hmm,
and saying like, look, you know, I'm a human being. This profoundly damaged my life. I mean, she's not really even, I mean, she's writing it really kind of matter-of-factly.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to take this woman who was all, you know, this girl who was just freeze-framed in the beret and just kind of like, as I say, just, you know, a kind of appendage to a Bill Clinton joke as a human being, and look at how she was treated, both in terms of the political process, but also in terms of media and in terms of leading feminists.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, I mean, the record just looks like so ugly to me. I mean, you know, not like whatever. It's not great what she did, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, even, I just have to say, I'm going to go off on one quick tangent and then I promise I'll stop. Yeah, right, quick tangent. I mean, I remember one time I was in a classroom. I was in college. I was visiting a friend in another college and during my undergraduate days. And they had a guest speaker who was some type of Clinton administration official. And some, you know, Monica Lewinsky came up. And all that I really remember about that was her whole frame was like, we kind of let him down. Or because of the government shutdown, there wasn't enough people around to protect him. You know, from this girl. And what I'm saying is, like, you can strip out any moralism you want at all. You could say, like, you know, Bill Clinton, he was, you know, we all have temptations, you know, like, I'm not even into, you know, Bill Clinton's a complicated guy. I don't think that that condemns him or his record or anything at all. And I think, you know, I want to respect that Monica Lewinsky says, hey, I had agency here. I wanted to do it. So I'm not even getting into all of that, but I'm just saying the fundamental premise that this woman was saying that the most powerful dude in the world needed to be protected from some 22-year-old is just so mind-boggling and delusional as a premise.
Yeah.
That it's just, it's offensive to anybody with a thought process. And then anything that flew out of that, where it really became like, you know, Bill Clinton, hey, he's managing the economy great. And this girl's just a, you know, I mean, like a crazy slut, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, that's the power of, I guess, a vagina. You know, it's like you desire it so deeply that you can't even think straight. And you.
And then we hate you for it.
Yeah. And then, you know, it's an evil thing that needs to be, you know, you have to be protected from it. That sounds like, you know, a lot of things that we start wars over, right? Like religious belief systems that we start wars over. It's so fascinating. Well, so now to totally date myself, Monica Lewinsky, that story broke when I was a junior in college.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, I was really invested in this question of like women's political representation and women's political participation. And you had this kind of like really visual example of, you know, obviously outside of like the details and the, you know, the salaciousness of the whole affair of a woman that was publicly shamed, you know, and humiliated, you know, and she was basically, you know, she was humiliated at the cost of maintaining his kind of pride and his, you know, status as, you know, and not necessarily a saint. It's like, everybody knows Bill Clinton's not a saint, but people still love him. Right. Like, it's like, oh, he just like has this one problem. Right.
He does have one. Yes.
He just has this like thing, you know, and like he's maintained this like tremendous reputation over the years. Whereas like she's had to go into hiding and, you know, is now coming out as like in support of people that, you know, are bullied on the internet. And you know, she's kind of recommitting herself to that kind of work. And I just think that double standard is like completely just like based on gender. Like there's like no, like it's just like we have different values for what we think women are worth versus what we think men are worth.
So that's absolutely true. And I, you know, there's no, I don't dispute that at all. But my two specific questions about it though are so, and I'm not saying, you know, maybe this is the cynical part of my personality, but I think like it's very ugly, but you know, what Clinton and his team did to her, you know, and again, it's incredibly ugly, but politically it makes sense. Yeah. I understand it. I get it.
Olivia Pope would do it.
Olivia. I don't watch that show. I can't, you know, I can't front on that. I don't watch it. I tried one episode of Scandal. It gave me a headache. Maybe that's too much for me, but it ain't, but she would do it. But what is amazing going back into it is not just that, you know, it's not surprising that the White House would go at her. It's surprising that, you know, Maureen Dowd would write, like, maybe not surprising that Maureen Dowd would write the things she wrote, but surprising that she would, you know, get praised for it. I think she won a Pulitzer for that particular coverage.
Yeah.
It's surprising that, you know, many woman writers and indeed, like, actual feminists, they didn't even say, look, we're making the political calculation that A, this whole thing is ridiculous, and B, we still support Bill Clinton regardless, but
Right. Let's
not ruin this young woman's life.
Right.
They went along with, like, yeah, she's a dumb hoe. Yeah. And Bill Clinton's awesome. I mean, you know, going back at that time. So that's one piece I'm wondering about. And the other piece is looking at you and what, you know, what you've done and the, you know, the community you really, frankly, you helped build, you were essential in building. I mean, and with all these broader platforms, I mean, do you think in today's world, Twitter, you know, feminist thing, even Jezebel, like, people aren't going to get away with, I mean, you know, slut shaming her.
Yeah.
Right? That really is the word.
That's a very positive spin on it that I didn't think about, because the kind of humiliation that she experienced is so par for the course to be a woman in the public eye today. Yeah. You know, in a way that, because of the volume, right? The volume of information that's coming at you, the volume with which you will receive hate and slut shaming is just unparalleled, right? It can be incredibly overwhelming. And so that's what I was thinking more, that, you know, at the time it was outrageous, but, you know, exactly the sentiment you're saying, that everyone was like, yeah, we're going to throw her under the bus and, like, that whore, and, you know, Bill Clinton is great. I think that would be in some ways even less surprising today, right? Because we're so quick to kind of just pile onto people. On the other hand, yeah, I hadn't thought about the possibility that because we've kind of built this infrastructure that reacts so quickly to, you know, moments like this, and we have examples of that, right? Like Susan G. Komen, when they tried to pull funding from Planned Parenthood, the feminist internet, like, rose up and, you know, kind of held the powers that be accountable, and there was a change in how the story was reported on. There was a change in, you know, like, the person responsible for it resigned, like, they recommitted the funds. I mean, we actually saw, like, quantifiable change from it. And I would like to think the same, right, in this kind of instance. I mean, we're talking about an internet that's debating the nuances of Bell Hook's opinion on Beyonce. So,
right, exactly.
You know, yeah. I guess a hopeful side of it would be that we would come to her defense.
Yeah, and I mean, my
and
final
be heard,
question.
And be heard in it.
And be heard, exactly.
Yeah, because we were in my women's studies classes, because you could just imagine me as a women's studies undergrad in 1998.
Right, and I would want that to be amplified, and I'd want that to hit the conversation. I mean, you know, so that, I mean, it goes without saying that the whole kind of broader conversation was totally, you know, incredibly, I mean, again, and in the context of Star and all of those people basically terrorizing her, she was betrayed by her friend. I mean, I'm just remembering all of these details because, you know, I was high school age when that happened, and I didn't follow it actually. I mean, I followed it, of course, but not, you know, I was doing my high-minded, like, oh, come on, there's important things in the world thing.
Right.
But,
right.
You know, but anyway, I mean, my final question about this though, and I'm wondering, and I guess, you know, I want to be really fair. So I don't think that Hillary Clinton, if she runs for president, like, she shouldn't really have to, I mean, she will get asked questions about this. And I, you know, I don't really, it's an unfair, just personal burden, I think, to put on her to talk objectively about this, because this is a person who, you know, her husband cheated on her with. So that's fine. But I wonder though, if in light of this new conversation, if, I mean, even for Bill Clinton, you know, yeah, like, he's a beloved figure. I mean, I like Bill Clinton in many ways. I think there's many, 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 many areas, if you're, you know, really progressive, that you would want to, you know, just say, hey, this was the actual record and we don't want to follow all those paths that he took us on in the 90s. And I think it would be you know, I'm just wondering, I mean, is it possible to maybe at least with Bill Clinton say, hey, do you regret in any way? I mean, you've already said you regret doing this, but do you regret that, you know, that this whole kind of thing was mobilized to go after her as a 22-year-old? And do you really want, you know, the life she's claimed to have lived, no job offers, kind of, you know, going, yeah. you know, getting by on loans. Is that something that, you know, would you like to, I don't know what the right word would be, but have some act of contrition that involved, like, let's not ruin this person's life mm-hmm. anymore because of something that, I mean, you know, none of us would obviously want to be held accountable for stupid decisions yeah. we made when we were younger or even when we're a little bit older, yeah. I might add.
So, I mean, I think that that would hurt Hillary Clinton's chances so much I think she's going to try to avoid anything that makes her look, you know, catty or jealous or like, I just don't think that like that's
total. No, but focusing on Bill.
I just don't even think it's something yeah. that like she's going to consider. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I think I was just focusing on Bill because I agree with yeah. you. I don't think it's not really Hillary's problem, frankly.
I mean like, that would be the baller political move, right? Yeah. The baller political move would be like for them to have a family photo together and be like, we've all forgiven each other after all these years. Sorry I ruined your life.
So, well, maybe
why
we're
are we laughing? Should we cut this? We should cut this part.
I don't know. They'll,
but they, that, they, I mean, that would be, I think putting it to rest would be the best move. Like, I don't think any, and this is, she's coming from such a place of humility and from such a, I mean, can you even imagine the kind of courage it takes for her to even decide that she's going to come out publicly and
absolutely,
you know, kind of reclaim her identity like that. I think it would look so bad to react in any way but supportive.
I agree completely. And then on that Aquarian note, I think we've wrapped up our time. This has awesome. Been great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.